And we're going to focus, I have a couple more resource sheets if anyone didn't get, by the way. We're going to discuss, focus on four passages in Ramban, try to see how they could be reconciled with each other. The four passages I marked on the board behind me just for reference's sake. Passage one was the Ramban from Bo that we read carefully last time. Two was from Drashas Tarsus Shantanimo, which we read carefully last time. Both of those sources seem to suggest a very broad approach to Hashgacha. And then the third passage, which we saw towards the end of Shir last time, was one in which Ramban seemed to endorse a more limited approach. That was Bereishis Perek Yudches. What I wrote up there is P3, and finally P4 is what we'll begin with today. It's from the Ramban on Iyov, and it's on your sheet. So P1 and P2 are page 1 of your sheets. P3 is on the second page, right column, and now we're going to do P4, which is bottom right of page 2. And we'll read it together. Zeh kasuv, so he's commenting here on the pasuk, alo yigara mitzadik einav, Hashem does not remove his eyes from the righteous. And the implication is that Hashem watches over the righteous in a way which differs from the way in which he watches over the wicked, and perhaps indicates a higher degree of hashgacha for the righteous. So, zeh kasuv mefaresh inyan gadol binyan hashgacha uvo bo psukim rabim. This pasuk alludes to a very important concept in the world of hashgacha, and there are many psukim that relate to this. Ki anchi haTorah veAmuna haTmima yaminu bashkacha ki akel yashgiach v'yishmor es anshei min haAdam. So people of perfect faith believe that God watches and protects humans. Kemosha kasov gadol haitzav rav halila sheinecha pikuchos al kol darchei bnei Adam laseis leish kedrachav uchifri me'alelav. Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, clearly indicating that Hashem watches over people and gives people their just deserts. Vamar David, kol avos doresh Hashem, l'chol yetzer machshivos mevin. Another pasuk pointing to Hashgacha. V'lo ba b'torah, o b'nevuah, shehi ha'kel mashkiach v'shomer ishei shar habrios, she'enan midabros. Rak shom, so you won't find anywhere in the Torah. This is an idea that the Rambam stresses as well, that there's no hashgacha for animals. Next week we could talk about the perspective of the Baal Shem Tov on hashgacha. He seems to be taking an approach that differs from basically all of the Rishonim. Maybe not all, we'll see, but almost all. In terms of hashgacha on animals, and we'll try to understand the mahalach of the Baal Shem Tov. But for now, so he writes that you won't find hashgacha on the creations that don't speak. Note how he expresses speech and the significance of the association. In other words, a creature able to speak is worthy of hashgacha. Rather, what do we find for animals? Rak shomer es haklalim b'chlal ha-shamayim u'tzva'am v'lachein hotra shchita l'tzarech adam. Since there is no hashgacha pratis on animals, just hashgacha klalis, again, perhaps a little later today we'll talk about what we mean in a more specific way with hashgacha klalis and pratis. Right now, he's just saying that he's shomer haklalim. So that is why shechita is permitted. Now let's try to explain this just a little bit, and you'll see We'll see shortly how he elaborates on these points. What he's saying over here is actually almost a restatement of the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, one of the comments of the Rambam on Hashgacha in Mor Nevuchim. What the Ramban over here is writing is that mankind's providence stems from its recognition of God. We'll see in a second, he's going to write, Ki ha'adam mipnei shehu makir es elokav yashgiach alav yishmor oso. The reason why there is hashgacha on people is because they're makir elokav. And, as we'll see, he's about to write in a second, we'll read it and sign it in a moment, the righteous who are more connected to God will have a greater degree of hashgacha, right? Umenatam azeh yishmor es hatzadikim, right? Such that the absolute chassid, the person who's constantly cleaving to God, will be protected from all harm. Right? Again, ad ki achasira gamor adavek be'elokav tamid ve'lo yipared adavek b'machshav tobo binyan minyanei olam yenishmar tamid mikol mikrei hazman afilu ha'avim b'teva. Right? So the chassid is totally protected from teva. Why? Because he's someone who's constantly cleaving to God. On the other hand, those who are far away from God might suffer and even die due to those interactions with nature. And even if death wasn't really warranted by their sins, right? V'afilu lo yischayev misa b'cheto asher chata yemeshulach v'nezav l'mikrim. So let's read that inside in a second. But the Ramban over here writes that this is why it's permissible to shecht animals, he writes. Why is it permissible to shecht animals? Why should that be? It's because they're not subject to hashgacha pratis, only hashgacha klalis. So again, this is an idea that's stated explicitly in the Rambam, in Mor Nevuchim. It's actually interesting that in his Perash HaTorah, the Ramban gives a different explanation in Bereishis Perek Aleph as to why it is that Shechita is permissible. The context over there is a discussion. It's in Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chav Tes in Bereishis, why it is that initially it was prohibited to slaughter animals to consume their meat, and later, following the Mabul, it became permissible. And the Ramban over there writes that initially it was permissible, it was prohibited because mipnei shebalei nefesh atznua yesh bam ktsas ma'ala benafsham nidmu ba lebalei hanefesh hamuskelas v'yesh lahem bechira betovasam umizonehem v'yivcheru min hatzar v'amisa v'yivrchu. Right? In other words, it to some degree is immoral, at least initially, to kill animals, because they too have some elevation in their soul, meaning to say their soul is more elevated than, let's say, a rock, right? Something that's domeim. And they have some commonality with a nefesh hamuskelas. For example, they choose where to eat, and they flee from pain and from death. And that's why originally it was wrong. And after the flood, because animals were saved for the sake of man, then it became permissible. Again, that's a topic that requires a lot of elaboration, but not for now. And then he writes, Vim kolzelo nasan lana rishus benefesh v'asar lahem evrim enachai. Still, some remnant of that respect that we have to have for animals due to their elevated status is what prohibited evrim enachai. And then when mitzvos were given to the Jewish people, so that would explain, let's say, the laws of Shechita. He writes, V'zeh tam ha-shechita, and that's the concept of Tzar Balei Chaim De'oraisa, he writes, and so on and so forth. So, it's not a stira, it's sort of interesting, though, to put these two comments together. Over there, he writes why, at least, you have to have some degree of respect to animals, but over here he writes, still, ultimately, shechita was permissible because of the lack of hashgacha. And then he writes, so let's continue from where we left off. The gam l'chaper al nafshosenu b'damam ala mizbeach. Likewise, this explains why slaughtering animals could be a kapara for mankind. Gatam haze yaduo barur. Ki adam mipneishu makir es elokav yeshkiach alav yishmor. So like we said, the reason for the greater degree of hashkacha is because man could be makir elokav, and therefore there's hashkacha. Vilochein shahabrioshein and yod os boram, as opposed to animals. So, if man in general could have hashkacha because he's able to be makir es Hashem, so seemingly, naturally, the greater level of hakara that a person has, the greater their hashkacha. So tzaddikim will have greater shmira. Ki kasher libam veinam tamid imo. And again, this is very much similar to what the Rambam writes in Mar Nevuchim. Because their hearts and their eyes are constantly with Hashem. Ki eine Hashem aleihem meireshis hashana v'achrishana. So they're zocha to greater hashkacha. Ramban always understands that the notion of eine Hashem refers to this hashkacha, right? Like on this pasuk that we're commenting on in Iyov. Well, yigara mitzadik enav. Ye nishmar tamid mikol mikri hazman. So the tzaddik will be constantly protected from mikre hazman, right? From mikre. Now it's very important to remember these words, because remember the Rambans in passage 1 and 2 all seem to deny the notion of mikre, deny the notion of teva. And here he's saying that tzaddikim, due to their constant cleaving and connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are protected from mikra and teva. So one second, I thought there's no such thing as mikra and teva. Anyone who says that there is such a thing as ein lo chelek b'taras Moshe. Okay, let's read on. Ukefir kirvaso lidabek belokav yishtamer shmira me'ula. The greater connection, the greater shmira. Why? Because, again, there's this constant connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, Memela, there's going to be a constant Shmira. Again, this is almost taken from the Rambam. V'harichuk min hakel b'machshavto u'v'masav afilu lo yischayev misa b'cheto asher chata yemushulach v'ne'ezav l'mikrim. And if you're distanced from God, you are abandoned to Mikra. In other words, seems like there's this idea of mikra, and someone who is not connected to God is abandoned to mikra. Uvo b'zeh psukim rabbi, many psukim support this idea. Amar David ragle chasidov yishmor v'rishoyim b'choshech idamu. Right, so the ragle chasidim Hashem protects. The rishoyim walk in the dark. They're left unprotected from nature. Amar. They're like someone walking in the dark, likely to fall if you're not very careful. Very important nafkamina that comes out from this approach. Since most people are from this middle category, right? They're not tzaddikim gemurim, so hence they're not entirely protected from mikra. Sivsa Torah, hechalei tanilchamim, v'inyan meshuach milchama lashiv hayireim. Right? We find in the Torah that the Torah generally guides us and directs us to do hishtadlos. For example, the preparations that the Torah tells us to make for warfare. Why? Because they're not necessarily chasidim, and therefore they won't necessarily be protected from all mikra. The lohimasis levav achiv kilvavo, the chaltikun hamarachos asher b'torah b'neviim kigon vayishal David b'Hashem vayomer lo salah seve al achareihem. Right? What do you need to do? War tactics. and tricks and the like. We could go lechum ashachta behar tabor v'lakachta imcha ses alafim ish ki imruim heim yotzim b'ma'at goy v'notzchem b'li neshek. Right? Were we entirely chasidim, zolcha to shmira me'ula, so we wouldn't need weapons. But we're not, or we can't, certainly we can't assume that we are, and hence we have to do ishtadlos in warfare. V'lo ayu chayavim b'nitzuach, lo yo'il lamo. Raka inyan, ki ru'uyim lehisnaheg b'derach ha'teva v'amikra. Very interesting idea. Meaning to say, if we were chasidim and totally zochet to victory, so we wouldn't need weapons. And lemaisa, if we're supposed to lose this war, so all the weapons in the world are not going to help. There's nothing we could do. But sometimes we will be zocha to win with ishtadlos. Right? It's not nigzar aleinu misa. It's not nigzar aleinu chayim. But with ishtadlos, we can win. The Mabit writes a similar notion about Beis Elokim, about why we daven, let's say, for a chola. What are you davening for a chola for? Right? What happened to Rosh Hashanah? Mi yechyeh, mi yamos. See, it's very simple. So some people are nachtam l'chaim, so there's no need to daven for them. Some people are nachtam l'misa, and all the davening in the world won't help. But some people, their gzera is that with tefillah and with ishtadlos they'll live, and without that they'll die. So it's for them who we daven, since we're not privy to the information of a person's gzera on Yom Kippur, so we daven for everybody. Anyhow, so this statement, this passage we just read, seems to resemble Rambam's naturalistic approach to Ashgacha, right? And significantly, Ramban explains that the tzaddik's connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is what affords him the protection. So Ramban over here seems to accept what the Rambam writes, that generally speaking, our materiality makes us subject to the laws of nature, but at the same time, a human being is capable of personally connecting to God, and thus, even though humans, due to that materiality, are subject to natural phenomena, right? Hahovim b'teva, but still, someone who transcends that materiality can be saved from suffering. Ramban writes about this in many places, about how a human being can transcend that materiality. He writes, I think we talked about this before Pesach, how someone who's perfected themselves to such a degree, there's no need for their body and soul to even separate when they die, like Eliyahu and Chanoch, because there's no stira between the two of them. And ultimately, everybody will be zocha to that form of existence in Olam Haba after Tchias HaMesim. But for almost everybody else, because in their lifetime they led a life in which there is that stira between Gufan and Neshama, so there needs to be the tikkun of the Neshama and the Olam HaNeshamos, like Gehenim, the tikkun of the Guf, that takes place upon burial, and so on and so forth. Anyhow, so everything we think we just read, if you take a look, we decided for some reason to do Ramban before Rambam. Maybe that wasn't a good choice, but the Ramban over here, the presentation here in passage 4 seems to very much resemble what the Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim 3:51. And basically that leaves us with a number of questions, but to highlight two questions, we'll say like this. If you remember from last time, in Drashas Tarsus Shem Tamima, passage 2, the Ramban explicitly rejected Rambam's view insofar as the Rambam maintained that miracles were exceptional and, generally speaking, nature is operational. And, as we read last time, the Ramban had very sharp words to say about that approach. And here, in passage 4, he's more or less quoting Rambam's approach, Dashgacha for Mornevuchim. Number 2 is the Ramban, in his commentary on Bo, passage 1, as well as Drashas Tarsus Shem Tamima, passage 2, writes that anyone who states Tava exists is no chelik in Taras Moshe. And yet, over here, in passages 3 and 4, he writes that only the tzaddik, who is constantly cleaving to God, is protected from Tava. Right? So those are two questions. Question number 1 is his approach to the Rambam. In P4, he seems to endorse the Rambam's view to a large degree. In P2, he rejects it, which of course might also relate to the complexity in the Rambam's view, and the mixed messages one gets from that. Again, I hope we had a chance to carefully go through Rambam and try to see the unity in his view as well. But number 2 is how do we explain his Mahalach on Teva. So before, let's first look to maybe question number 1. And I'd like to show how even in this passage we just read, passage 4, there are significant differences between Rambam and Ramban. Again, to some degree this is going to depend on how you learn Rambam, but it's clear from the Ramban that we just read in passage 4 that the special protection afforded to the tzaddik is supernatural, right? V'yishtamer mehem b'neis yaseh lo tamid. That's what we just read. In other words, it's supernatural protection for the tzaddik. Now this might differ from the Rambam. The Rambam, though he also says that tzaddik is zocha to a higher level of protection, the Rambam implies that that protection takes place naturalistically. In a couple ways it's naturalistic. First of all, it's natural that due to the closer connection you have to God, you'll be not subject to teva. But also, the shmir takes place naturally. I'll give you an example. Let's say someone, a tzaddik, is thinking about boarding a ship, and this ship is going to be wrecked at sea due to a storm. So, because it's poorly built. So, for the Rambam, the hashgacha will be that the tzaddik will understand that it's a bad idea to go on this ship. Whereas for the Ramban, the tzaddik will be saved because even though there's going to be this storm, the ship will be protected from the storm. Again, perhaps to better appreciate that chiluk, we'll have to see the Rambam inside. But another way in which you see it is I think from what the Ramban writes about the special level of hashgacha that Rishayim receive. And I think it's a nekuda that highlights the distinction between the Rambam and the Ramban. Take a look on page 2, in the middle of the page, in the middle of the right column. This is a piece from Devarim Perek Yud Aleph. Ki Hashem lo yasa nisim tamid, laseis metahar aretz b'chol eis, Yoreo Malko Shul Hosef Bedagam Vesiro Shul Yitzar Laharbos Gam Ha'isev Besadel Vehema Oshiatzor Hashamayim V'yevosh V'yivshu Rak Almaise Rov Ha'am. In other words, Hashem doesn't react to individuals, as we saw, we saw this last time, there's a neighborhood with some tzaddikim and some rishayim. So Hashem doesn't make rain on the farms of the tzaddikim and drought on the farms of the rishayim. Rather, it's al ma'isa rov ha'am, aval yachid hu b'zchuso yechiyah v'hu b'aval no yamos. V'hine amar ki ba'asosom kol ha'mitzvah mi'ava shleima yaseh iman kol anizim ha'ilu l'tova. Right, so when Klal Yisrael though does act correctly, then there'll be zocha to this special hashgacha. V'amar ki ba'avdam ha'odazar yaseh iman os l'ra. V'da ki anisim lo yasu l'tova l'ra rak l'tzadikim gemurim o l'rishayim gemurim. Aval abenu nim kederach minhago shel olam yaseh bahem tova ura kedarkam ukali losam. So an incredible statement over here. When it comes to tzadikim gemurim, and now this is what's so surprising, rishayim gemurim, so then they will have nisim. But benunim, so then kedarach minhago shel olam yaseh ban tovo ra kedarkam ukali losam. In other words, the tova and the ra they experience, there still is hashkacha, but it's kederach minhago shel olam, right? Kederach mukali losam, as opposed to the tzaddik gamor and the rasha gamor, that it's derech nisim. So now, if you take Rambam's approach that the tzaddik does have higher level of hashgacha, but it's naturalistic, it's due to his cleaving to the ribono shel olam, so it wouldn't make any sense to say that the Rasha Gamor also is Zocha to this higher level of Ashkacha. Yet the Ramban writes that the Tzaddik Gamor and the Rasha Gamor are both Zocha to this higher level, this Nisim, this higher level of Ashkacha. So what's the Pshat in that? So it's an interesting question. Why? We'll talk about it briefly now. We can't fully go into it, but one idea is probably coming from the famous Gemara in Erchin on Tazayin Amud Beis. Right? If someone goes 40 days without any types of yisurin, even the smallest annoyances, the types of things that everybody has, right? For 40 days, his shoelaces never untie, and he always pulls out exact change from his wallet. So such a person is evidently being protected, otherwise he would certainly experience the types of inconveniences that everybody else experiences. And the Gemara says that's kibul olamo. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving him that incredible protection so as to make sure that this rasha is rewarded for any zechuyos that he might have acquired while in this world, so as not to be rewarded in the next world. We talked a little bit about last time, not last year, but earlier, I think, why that's fair, right? At first glance, it doesn't seem fair at all. Why should the Russia, if the Russia's entitled to reward, he should also get it in Olam Haba, right? We talked about that, Hashem, Ramban's idea that Hashem rewards a person where they wish to be rewarded. If you're focused on Olam Hazeh, so you'll get rewarded in Olam Hazeh. But one way or the other, the Gemara's telling us that on occasion, the Rishayim will be Zocha to a extraordinary level of Ashkacha. Another aspect of this is something we talked about in the last year, which was that sometimes for the purpose of carrying out God's plan in history, it's important for Rishayim to have a higher degree of Hashkacha, in that they play a very significant role. Last time we talked about how Ramban shows that this was the case with respect to Paro and the like. Anyway, the point though is that this is an idea that would make no sense in a purely naturalistic framework in which the greater degree of Hashkacha for Tzaddikim is a natural consequence of their cleaving to God, because that would make no sense for Rishayim Gemurim. So I think we've at least partially resolved our first question. But the second question, what is Ramban's approach to Teva? why is it that in P1 and P2 he so categorically denies the idea of Teva and Minhago Shel Olam, and in P3 and P4 he seems to allow for it. So one possible solution to account for these P3 and P4 is to suggest that when someone is unworthy of protection from Teva, then Hashem allows them to be subject to Teva. And this, in and of itself, is a form of punishment. The abandonment to nature is a form of punishment. Now, this idea is stated explicitly in a number of Rishonim. I'll mention two of them right now. One is the Chovos Halvavos. Chovos Halvavos, I don't know if we'll have a chance to go through it, but he's one of the Rishonim that has the most far-reaching, all-encompassing approaches among Rishonim to Hashgacha, that everything is really subject to Hashgacha. And yet, he also writes, I didn't put this on your sheet, I'll just read it to you shortly, but, Ki aboter bezulas Hashem, mei sir ha'alokim hashgachaso me'alav, u'meniach oso biyad mi shebatach bo. Right? So someone who doesn't have bitachon in Hashem, he doesn't have trust in God, so Hashem is meisir hashgachaso, and he leaves him up to the whims of the person that he was about to yachin. Right? So if I have bitachon in Hashem, then Hashem will protect me from my mean boss or my enemy. If I am not boteach b'Hashem, I'm boteach in my boss, so then I'm going to be left him. And the Chovos Halvavos is saying it's a type of mida keneged mida, right? You have bitachon in Hashem, so you'll be zocha to hashgacha from Hashem. You have bitachon b'vnei Adam, so then har Hashem arsha yiftach b'Adam. And the like. Along similar lines, the Meiri writes, this is in Sota Beis Amud Aleph, Mepinos hadas miyusadoseha, hu lahamen biyosher mishpatei Hashem yisbarach, liyos ha'adam nigmo v'nanash b'chol nyanav lefim ha'asav, v'im tov v'im ra, v'lo yakev zeh mazal u'mareches kochavim, o echad min ha'mikrim, ela shelefamim, ya'azov le'mikra, o le'mazal, k'sha'adam enu roi lefim ha'asav, ligamel le'anesh, v'av zeh nikra tzaronesh, al tzad hipaka gmol b'makom, she'haya adam ra'ui, la'asos p'ulos ha'ruyus ligmol. In other words, the onesh is not, sometimes an onesh might be direct punishment, right? You do something wrong, and Hashem punishes you for it. But sometimes the onesh is to be left to mikra, to teva, to mazel, whatever it is, right? Now, perhaps this is the Ramban's approach as well. And in P3, right? So we saw certainly the Ramban acknowledges the existence of Teva and his distinction between the Tzaddik and the Beinoni. But that doesn't contradict P1 and P2 because Teva is not the status quo. Rather, it's a conscious decision by God to subject a person to Teva. Right? That's the formulation in passage four of the Ramban, which we saw today, where he uses the terms ne'azav le'mikrim. In other words, you're abandoned to mikra. It's not happenstance. Now, I think this is a very important conceptual distinction. It might be true that the modus operandi of teva is more common than nace, than the activist intervention, because most people might not qualify as tzaddikim. But it's a deviation from the norm in the conceptual sense. In other words, the norm is hashgacha, at least for a human being. It happens to be that when a person isn't zocha to hashgacha, so they're left to teva. Happens to be perhaps even that most people aren't zocha to this more all-encompassing hashgacha. So memela, most people are to a greater or lesser degree left to teva. So it might even be the case that the more common operating system is teva. But nevertheless, on a conceptual fundamental level, what is the norm? The norm is hashgacha. Sometimes you're nezav lemikra. So if we take this approach, then Ramban's position is monumentally different from the Rambam. Even though, in a practical sense, they both agree that the tzaddik is zocha tashkacha and the Beinoni isn't, and maybe they both agree that most people fall into the Beinoni category, and therefore they're not subject to so much hashkacha, or at the very least they're sometimes subject to tepa. But, so, in a practical level, they're very similar to each other. Hence, the Ramban can comfortably quote, paraphrase, much of what the Rambam says in P4. Because on a practical level, they're very similar, but on a conceptual level, they're totally different. Mm-hmm. Because for the Rambam, the norm is teva, olam kiminhagel noheg. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world in which the standard operating principle is teva, and a tzaddik, due to his dveikus belokim, can be zocha to go lemala min ateva, and be zocha to special hashkacha. Whereas, for the Ramban, it's the reverse. The standard operating principle for human beings should be hashkacha. Happens to be that due to decisions we've made, we may very frequently be nezav lemikra. So, just one second. So what was our kasha, right? The Ramban says in passage 1 and 2, She'ein la'adam chelek b'toyres Moshe Rabbeinu ad shemamin b'chol divareinu mikreinu shekulam nisim ein ban tevel min hago shalom. So certainly, the simple reading of that sentence alone does seem to be saying that teva is totally non-existent. But again, especially I think when you read passage 2, which says that line, but at the same time also seems to acknowledge teva, right? What did he say in passage 2? Ki im nomar sha'teva hu mechal kelakol v'hu apoel ba'olam. What's so objectionable is to say that teva is mechal kelakol. That's absolute kfira, as we mentioned last time. And that's what he says, for example, right? Lamashal, the Ramban, we noted this last time in passage 2. He says, you know, anyone who prays for success in business is acknowledging providence, right? Otherwise, what's the point of praying? So that doesn't prove everything is from Hashem. That just proves that there's some degree of hashgacha. In other words, what... What is Ramban so upset about in passage 2? In what the Rambam says, because what is his critique of the Rambam, right? Shehu megareya hanisim umagbir hateva. His tendency is to minimize miracles and maximize nature, right? That's what, for example, in the Perish Mishnayis and Shmona Prakim Parakas even says that maybe you'll even say that nisim are built into teva from Tchilas Bereshis. That's the pshat in the Mamran Chazal about the things that were created by Nishmashos, right? That tendency to try to minimize nisim, maximize teva, is the opposite approach, because fundamentally the operating principle is nisim, right? Or lamashal. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim 2:29 writes that nisim are temporary deviations, right? And that's the approach that he's critiquing, or another reflection of this, Lamashal. I think there's a very powerful simon of this chiluk, right? The Rambam very famously writes that even Bimos HaMashiach, Olam Kiminhogo Holech, right? And the Ramban critiques this very, very strongly. Because what's the pshat? The pshat the Ramban is saying is, you know, in a messianic era, there's going to be no need for teva anymore. So naturally, we'll return to the more natural state of nisim and hashkacha. And the fact that the Rambam writes that even Bimos HaMashiach Olam Kiminhago Noheg is a reflection of the idea that on this fundamental level, the dominant operating principle of this world is teva. Oh. So I think perhaps that's the pshat in the Ramban. In other words, even in passages 1 and 2, he's not denying that teva exists. But the question is, how does it exist? And what he says in passages 3 and 4 where he says that if you're not Zocha Tashkacha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will relinquish you and you'll be abandoned to Teva, doesn't and it's only going to be the Tzaddik that Zocha to this higher level of Ashkacha. So that doesn't contradict what he says over here. Now I'd like to make a couple of I think smaller haros that are telling about this point, and then perhaps start something else. We'll see how much time we have. Throughout these passages that we've been reading, we've seen the Ramban refer to the distinction between a Nes Nister and a Nes Nigla. I haven't really defined these terms. But as we've seen, the Ramban certainly holds that life is full of miracles, but we don't always appreciate this or realize them because they're not overt. What is an overt miracle? What's a Nes Nigla? So one that openly defies the laws of nature. Whereas Nisim Nistarim is the way that Hashem generally protects tzaddikim, right? And the Ramban therefore writes that because that's the norm, these hidden miracles are not generally explicated in the text of the Chumash. Right? Me'elein lazor tzadik olahachris rasha lo yaskiru b'toro b'nevim. Doesn't mean that, you know, the omission doesn't imply that they're not constantly happening. Like he says, kola yisodos ha-Torah b'nisim nistarim heim, but rather because they need not happen. Now, what's interesting is, so that's pretty pasha, it makes a lot of sense in light of what we were saying. It is interesting to note that the Ramban characterizes a lot of things that intuitively we would have called Nisim Gluyim as Nisim Nistarim. For example, he writes that Yocheved's birth of Moshe's birth at when Yocheved was 130 years old, or the fact that David HaMelech was the fourth generation of those entering Eretz Yisrael, which would imply a minimum of generations being 93 years, right? Because David was born 370 years after they entered Eretz Yisrael. So these are Nisim Nistarim that happen to ensure the births of these very significant people. But onlookers could have denied that, right? Ichashev bahem laroim shum inhago shel olam v'heim ba'adam onesh v'schar be'emes. Right? In other words, I guess if you asked us, giving birth at 130 years old is certainly overtly l'malam in Ateva. But I think the point that the Ramban is getting at is that, as we know, in our world, it's very easy to deny the greatest of miracles. And sometimes things happen in history. I think this week and next week is certainly a time of year that we're especially aware of this idea. And I think to us, we think, how could any reasonable person possibly deny the hashkacha of these monumental events? And of course, we all know that they're plenty of seemingly reasonable people that deny the Ashkacha. Don't ever underestimate that tendency. So just an interesting point that what the Ramban would technically classify as a Nes Nister. Ramban writes, that's the Hanhag of the Avos, right? Menatzech, Hashem, when that's the psukim at the beginning of in Shmos, distinguishing between the hanhaga of Kel Shakai and Shem Havaya, right? That with respect to the Avos, so Hashem doesn't, he wasn't minatzeach ma'arachos ha'shamayim v'lasos imam nisim gedolim, shalom is batal mehem in hag shel olam. It's actually an interesting question how the Ramban deals with the birth of Yitzchak, because he does imply that it was an ace, it was an ace nigla, but at the same time, right, that's why it's stressed by the psukim as opposed to the birth of Moshe. But at the same time, the Shem Havai isn't used. But anyway, another time. So that's point one. Point two is the individual versus the nation. So again, we've been seeing how, generally speaking, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not do overt miracles. Like we read in the Ramban last time, it's not in each and every generation that things like Yetzias Mitzrayim happens, which is why it's so important to remember them when they do. But at the same time, there is a higher degree of hashgacha on Eretz Yisrael than the rest of the world, right? We saw, I'm quoting the Pasuk, Eini Hashem Doresh Osa Tamid, right? Meireshis Hashana Vad Achreshana, and other distinctions. And take a look, on page 3 on the left, just to see a reflection of this. The Ramban from Vayikra Chavav, which is that, right, this is from the Tochacha. Right, we'll start from the second passage. Aval elu abrachos shenifresh shebeparsha hazos hem klalios be'am v'hen be'yos kol amenu kulam tzadikim v'lachen yazkir tamid b'kan ha'aretz v'nasna ha'aretz v'vetach ba'aretzachem shalom ba'aretz min ha'aretz lo savor ba'aretzachem right cherev v'kfar bi'arnu ki kol elu abrachos kulam nisim en b'teva shiavo agshamim via shalom in oivim, v'yavo morech b'libam lanuas meya mepnei chamisha v'asos ochukim ha-mitzvos. Obviously, from a natural perspective, there's no correlation between observance of mitzvos and rainfall or military success. V'lo shi'akol hefech mepnei zareinu b'shan ha-shviyas. V'af al pi shehem nisim nistarim sholom k'menhago noig imahem. In other words, when Klal Yisrael does the Ratzon Hashem, so there's more rain, but it's an Eis Nister, right? It's not like there's no rain, but our crops are still prosperous. No, Hashem brings rain, and our crops are prosperous. Avalheim is parsimim mitzad yosam tamid liolam b'chol haaretz. But it almost becomes like a Eis Nigla because it's so common, right? Like, imagine somebody was a money manager, and for year after year, they, 10, 15 years, they never lost. They always had a good, right? So anybody reasonable would say, either he's a fraud, or it's an ace. So the same thing, with rain. In other words, 1 year, 2 years of good crops, so okay, you could deny it. But this consistent hanhaga, where we do what's right, and as a nation we enjoy the prosperity, so that's something that almost the nesim nistarim become a nes nigla. Ki atzadik ha'echad yichya v'yasir ha'shem achlo mekirbo v'imale yamav yikra gam b'zek b'ktsas v'shayim. Aval shatia aretz achas kula dam echad tamid beredes hageshem b'tovus ovei v'shalva v'shalom uvrios v'gvura v'shivron ha'oivim, etc., etc. So that's what the pasuk says. Ro kol ame aretz ki shem Hashem nikra lecha v'yarmi mecha. That if we do what's right nationally, then the whole world will notice eventually, and that creates the equivalent of a nes nigla. It also highlights the point that if we're to see hashgacha in our own lives and in the world, so you don't necessarily see it in one event, one action, or the like, but when a person looks at history or at their own life or the like, you'll notice hashgacha when you when you look at the bigger picture. Fine. So, what time is it? So, this is what I guess I was hoping to do today for the second half of Shir, but we're going to just introduce it, I guess, and we'll start next time, which is, I think this sets, I guess, one last point even before that. The Ramban writes as well that this is why this does relate to Hashkacha, right? He writes over here, that's why Asa is punished for seeking doctors because, right, the Pasuk in Devar Hayamim that says, V'gam b'chol yolo darash es Hashem ki berofim, is a reflection of this. In other words, the approach to Hashkacha that he has does, it's not just a theoretical point, but it does relate to the type of ishtadlos that a person should do. Okay, so the I guess the hakdama for next week's shiur, at least the first half of next week's shiur, maybe the first half of next week's shiur we'll do the problem of evil, which is what we'll introduce now, and then I'd like to, the second half, maybe we'll do the mahalich of the Baal Shem Tov on Hashkacha. I assume we have regular shiur next week, is that correct? Yeah, okay, good. So, So with this approach in mind, we're going to turn to the question, one of the most challenging questions that the religious person has to deal with, and that is sometimes called the problem of evil. You could present the problem of evil in a philosophical way. You know, philosophers will say, how do you reconcile the existence of evil with the existence of God, and they'll say things like, they'll write logical arguments. You can take a look at some of them. But it's also, I think, even more the intuitive problem. A person goes ahead and, you know, they see a child suffering with leukemia, Rachmana Litzlan, and, you know, that tugs at the heart. And so the question is, how do we deal with that? So what I'd like to do, give you homework for next week since we didn't get to do it today, is to read, the Ramban deals with this in a number of places, but most, I think, comprehensively in Torah Sa'adam. So you have that here, page 4, left column, really more or less going till the end of the packet. I'd like you to read that for next week. We'll start it now. And he deals with suffering, the righteous suffering, and the like. Of course, ultimately we know, Ein biyadenu lo shavas v'shayim and lo yisuri tzadikim. But still, the Ramban feels that we should do what we can to try to understand it. And that's what we're gonna work on next time. So we're gonna start now, because we have 3 minutes, and then we'll pick up next week. Vod matzinu she'amru rabosenu im roa adam she'isurin ban li'alav yifash vesh b'maisav she'nemar nach besad derachenu v'nach kolra. Right, so Ramban begins with a very important point, which is that Chazal tell us how to respond to the Yisurin that a person experiences. What are you supposed to do? Yisurin ban liyadcha, yifash vesh b'maisav. Pishpesh v'lo matzah, yitla b'bitol Torah. Tala v'loi matzah, Biyadua shiyisurin shal avahein, shenemar, ki es asher yahav Hashem yochiach. So a person searches, and he doesn't find any averos that he's done that would account for suffering. He should assume it's bitul Torah. Let's say he hasn't even found bitul Torah, so must be yisurin shal ava. What do yisurin shal ava mean? So Rashi, on that Gemara in Brachos, says that Yisurin Shel Abba, Rashi's Lashon is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Miyasro Ba'olam Hazeh, Beloshim Avon, Kedei Laharbo Scharo Ba'olam Haba Yoser Michdei Zchu Yosef. So here we have a pretty good guy, right? He has no Averos, not even Bitol Torah. So why is he suffering? So it sounds like he's suffering. See, he gives him suffering in this world so that he'll have more Olam Haba. That's the way Rashi seems to translate it. So she may be not as simple when you look at the Rashi and Amud Beis, but that's what Rashi and Amud Aleph says. It's also the way the Rambam understands Yisur and Shel Abba. Rambam and Mar Nevuchim. But the Rambam writes that that's preposterous. It's absurd. What, Hashem tortures somebody to give them more reward? Can you imagine such a thing? Right? Ah, this guy is such a tzaddik. Such a tzaddik. No Averos, no Bitul Torah. I love him so much, I want him to get some reward. So let me just torture him a little bit. So he'll be zocha to more reward. And the Rambam acknowledges in his treatment of the problem of evil that there are some thinkers who do accept this notion of Yisur and Shel Abba, but it's not the position of most of Chazal, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's wrong. So the Ramban accepts the notion of Yisur and Shel Abba, like Pashtus and Chazal, but the question is, how is he going to understand it in a way that makes sense? And he's going to offer a different definition. So that's what we're going to begin with tomorrow. What are Yisur and Shel Abba? And I think, not tomorrow, but next week. And that'll hopefully give us a better understanding of the problem of evil in general. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. Could I get the attendance sheet? Thank you.